wouldn't make too much of it. I mean, you know, Frankie's always been, as you know, and everyone does, a real willing people person, and, you know, he's always been right out front there as far as promoting the ball club and baseball in general, and I don't think this is, you know, people can interpret it how they want to, but I wouldn't say this is that he's being brought in to say farewell to everybody. I think that this is, you know, just another chance for him to, you know, interact with the fans that have supported him throughout his major league career, and you know, it's obviously a good thing for the Indians because it figures to bring in even more fans to Tribe Fest. So it's a good thing. You know, it's the thing about the Lindor thing right now is it's the overriding topic about the Indians, and will be until he's either traded or they ride it out and he plays two more years with the Indians and then leaves as a free agent. So there's never, I don't think, going to be a moment where it's going to be clear that they're going to trade him. If the trade comes, it's going to just come and that'll be it. And, you know, it kind of leaves everyone hanging, but, you know, what else can you do? You just probably like the Indians front office, they're sifting through whatever offers they get from teams, and when they get one they like enough to make the deal, they'll make the deal. But I still, my own opinion is that he's still going to be on the team right to the end. I think they'll take this right to the end as they did with Brantley, because, I mean, you know, this is still a contending team. It's not a last-place team that has one superstar that they're willing to trade for some prospects to help them down the road. I mean, they're built to win right now, and they're a much better team with Frankie Lindor than they are without him, even if it means losing him for no return at the end of these 2 years. So, you know, anything could happen, but I don't really see a really strong argument for diminishing what you think can be a contending team because you're going to lose a guy in 2 years.
Well, that's what I think's been interesting about it, Jim. There's all the talk, oh, Freddie could be moved, but then you don't hear many rumors other than the Dodgers kind of came into it for a while there about anyone really being in place to make that next move to get Francisco Lindor, do you?
No, I mean, you know, we're not privy to what names are being thrown around, although there's a lot of speculation about that, but I do think it seems like the Indians are holding out to legitimately be overwhelmed by an offer, and by an offer that I think when you're talking about a player of the caliber of Francisco Lindor at his age and his accomplishments already and what he figures to do in the next 8 or 9 years of his career, to me, if you're the Indians, whatever team you talk to, every player on that team's roster should be in play in these kinds of talks. And for example, one name that I haven't seen mentioned, which if maybe the Indians have asked about him, but if you're talking to the Dodgers, I would say Cody Bellinger is the guy who would have to be brought up, because you're talking about one of the biggest stars in the game leaving the Indians, and you should be able to rightfully explore the possibility of bringing back a name just as big and just as impactful. So if the trade does happen, it's got to be a pretty big blockbuster, I would say. You know, it may include some top prospects, but I would be surprised if it didn't include at least one proven major league star on whatever team they're going to deal with.
Well, that's what Bull and I have kind of touched on with what they got back for Trevor Bauer last year, and that guy was towards the end of a contract. It seems it's got to be something with that kind of wow power, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I would say even more so, because Bauer can become a free agent after this coming season. And, you know, Lindor has two more full seasons before he can be a free agent. So, sure. And, you know, he's like I say, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed if you pay attention to how not just the Indians but Major League Baseball promotes itself during the season and the offseason. Lindor is always prominently displayed. I mean, this isn't just the franchise player for the Indians and the face of their franchise, but he's one of the faces of the game now, and there's probably, I don't think, been a player of this magnitude that the Indians are apparently willing to trade in a long time. So if I'm them, I'm waiting out to absolutely be blown away by some club's offer and not come off there wouldn't be a lot of negotiation. I mean, if you want to talk about our best player, let's talk about one or two of your best players.
And that's what blows me away about all of these trade discussions and these trade rumors. Like you said before, I mean, we're not privy to the actual conversations that go down, but you do hear a lot of these names that are thrown against the wall, and I haven't seen a single package out there that's blown me away, and I'm guessing that the Indians probably haven't either, and that's why they haven't made the deal. But, Jim, you'd like to think, if you're talking about a guy like Frankie Lindor, you should be able to pick out just about any guy on the roster that you're trading with, in addition to any prospect in that system. If you're getting this guy under control for 2 years, and to Matt's point about the Bauer deal that went down last year, I mean, about a year ago, we were talking about the Indians potentially dealing Bauer or Kluber, and people said, well, you've got to trade him now because if you wait a little bit longer, you might not get a big package. Well, okay, the Indians waited until the deadline. They ended up getting a half a year out of Yasiel Puig. They got a big bopper who's under control for a few more years in Franmil Reyes. They got two good young arms who could factor to the rotation or the bullpen, and another prospect in addition to, for a guy that plays once every 5 days. And if that's what they got for Trevor Bauer, why is it we're only hearing just a few names from teams like the Dodgers, the Mets, and the like? It just doesn't seem like any of the rumored deals have offered nearly enough because, like Matt said, if the Indians got all of that for Trevor Bauer, why would they settle for anything even remotely close to being considered less for a guy like Lindor, who is a star?
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And as I said, the Indians are really, you know, some people may see that, you know, they're kind of on the clock here, but maybe they're not. I mean, they've got a chance to have the best shortstop in the game being in the middle of their infield for the next 2 years and giving them the best chance possible to get back to the World Series. Now, you know, if you want to make an offer to them to get that player off of their roster, you're going to have to give them significant talent back for that to happen. Because, like I said, this isn't a team that, you know, if the Indians were coming off a 90 loss team and they got Lindor and a bunch of other players and young guys that aren't really on a contending team, then maybe you would think about a package of prospects who might be Double-A, Triple-A guys who are ready, close to the big leagues, but not necessarily ready now, but are highly regarded prospects. Maybe you listen if you're the Indians then, but that's not the case now. As I said, this is a team that expects to contend in the coming season, and, you know, with Lindor in their lineup, should rightfully contend, and there's no reason for them to accept anything less than what they think is deserving of a guy of that caliber, and because they are contenders, you know, they're not thinking about taking an offer that gives them a player that's going to help them in 2022. They want somebody that's going to move the needle right now and make up for the loss of, you know, arguably one of the best all-around players in the game right now.
Again, we're speaking with Jim Ingram with the Chronicle-Telegram, the Medina Gazette, and a special contributor to Forbes.com. Jim, how likely do you think it is that the Indians could make an offer to Yasiel Puig to get him back and playing right field again next year? Here we are January 8th, and it doesn't seem like you're hearing a whole lot from the Puig camp, and he's not really been tied to many teams since allegedly meeting with a few around the winter meetings, and that was about a month ago. How likely do you think it is that the Indians might have a realistic chance of signing him?
I don't think he's real high on their priority list, to tell you the truth. I think that you know, he falls into that category of the way the game's developing now. You know, guys are closing in on 30 years old and are veteran guys, but not, you know, over-the-top impactful guys. They're the ones that seem to be the last ones to sign in each spring training. Like, you know, for example, Carlos Gonzalez last year, the Indians signed him after spring training started, and it didn't work out, but I think Puig is drifting towards that kind of thing. And, you know, he does have a lot of baggage that some teams probably don't want to mess with. And the Indians saw, you know, some of that last year. I think if he's still sitting there and spring training's about to start and they could get him for 1 year at a reasonable price, I think they would consider it. And, you know, assuming they don't land any big impact in outfielders before then, but barring that, I can't see them making a big commitment to him right now. Even as bad as they need an outfielder and a big bat out there, I just get the sense that he's not a real high priority for them.
And you look at the other outfielders that could be available, at least in the free agent market, you know, going to the trade side of things certainly opens up a whole different can of worms here. But from the free agent perspective, boy, I don't know. It just seems like Marcell Ozuna is a little out of their price range. But again, you could get that guy into the same position you just described with Yasiel Puig. If he gets to the beginning of spring training and doesn't have a home, then maybe he's got to settle for more of a short-term deal. Just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot else out there. Corey Dickerson was a name that was thrown out there earlier too. But for the Indians, they are definitely in a unique position with their outfielders. And you take a look at the bullpen. You know, I think people see this pen and they see that they've got some interesting elements in there. You know, with Klasse and Karinchak, they've got some youth in there. You've got Brad Hand, assuming he's right and he's healthy, along with Nick Whitgren. This so far appears to be a group with a great deal of potential.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Klasse is really an intriguing guy, and he's not a big name yet, but when you get a guy whose fastball averages around 100 miles an hour at the back of their bullpen, you know, that gets people's attention. And I think they thought they lacked some power arms out there. They had another good bullpen last year, but there weren't a lot of guys that could come in and get the big strikeout at the big moment. And Class A appears to be a guy capable of doing that kind of thing. I never really worry much about the Indians' bullpen because I give them a lot of credit. They do this every year. They don't do a lot of high-profile signings or guys that you've heard a lot about, but by the middle of the year, the end of the season, they're always ranked among the top two or three teams in the league in bullpens. They really seem to have a knack of finding the right kind of guys, and of course, Terry Francona is one of the great bullpen handlers ever, which makes this new rule where you got to face three batters a little bit troubling, I'm sure, for the Indians and for Francona, but they always seem to be able to piece together a bullpen, and I don't think that's going to be a problem this year. And you know, I think another thing that's getting not remembered a lot by fans right now is, you know, the Indians' starting rotation is going to be pretty much just as deep as it's been the last two or three years with the emergence of some of these young guys. So, you know, maybe the bullpen won't be called upon to carry as big a load this coming season as it has in the past.
Sure, and at the same time, I think you have guys that maybe don't find their way into the rotation being used in a totally different role with that three-batter minimum rule. I'm thinking of guys like Adam Plutko, Jeffrey Rodriguez, guys who are part of the rotation of the past. If you put those guys into the bullpen, you're not necessarily using guys who are considered one-trick ponies who are brought in just for matchup purposes. You've got guys who can get multiple batters out and satisfy that three-batter minimum. I think that would give the Indians at least a little bit of an edge. And, you know, Jim, I think that makes things pretty fascinating for this club moving forward because it's going to take a lot of managers, not necessarily a long time, but it's going to take some managers a little while to kind of figure that rule out.
Yeah, it is. I don't imagine there's very many managers that rule's very popular with very many managers. I know Terry Francona dislikes it a lot, and I don't blame him because you know it's nice to try to change rules and to pick up the pace of baseball. But I don't personally think that's going to pick the pace up that much. And when you get into telling managers how they're supposed to manage their team, I think that's starting to cross a line that baseball might want to think hard about going much further with that kind of a thing because, you know, the game still has to be played as best as it can be played, and the managers know their pitchers and their players better than anyone. And I kind of cringe a little bit when I see that they're making rules now to basically order managers how they use their bullpen, which goes against, you know, everything that managers stand for, because their job is to manage the game, as evidenced by their title of their job. So it's going to be an interesting period of adapting to that rule, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion of it. You know, there's invariably going to be some teams that are going to have to leave guys in that they don't want to leave in, and bad things are going to happen, and, you know, there'll be some throwing up of the hands and saying, well, my hands were tied because I had to leave them in for two more guys. It's opening a can of worms that I'm not sure is a can worth opening.
Jim, before we let you go, we've got to throw this out there. If you're an Indians fan, I highly recommend Jim's book, Mike Hargrove, A Baseball Life. Just fantastic stuff. I'm about a third of the way through it. I think so far of what I've read, you've done a wonderful job of revealing the human side of Mike Hargrove. And there's some really cool stories told in there. But I finished up last night. The chapter that you detailed in the boating accident back in 1993 involving Tim Cruise, Bobby Ojeda, and Steve Olin, unfortunately that resulted in the death of both Cruise and Olin. Just out of curiosity, I mean, how tough was it to put that chapter together? Because just thinking back in time to that whole incident, just how powerful that was within the organization and how difficult that was, it seemed like that was really kind of a turning point in the managerial career of Mike Hargrove, handling a situation like that that was almost impossible to handle.
Yeah, it really was. And he even admitted that he had no idea what he was going to say to the team that morning, the following morning, when he had to go in there and talk to the team, and he didn't know what he was going to say or how he was going to handle this. And there really was no manual to work off of for something this tragic. And it really was. And then actually Sharon Hargrove, Mike's wife, had a big role in that too. And the whole organization, I thought, really stepped up big time. And when that whole thing happened, it was a very emotional time for everybody. I remember it was the only off day of that spring, and my family happened to be down there with me. My wife and I took our kids to Disney World, and we came back like in the late afternoon. And I remember distinctly getting out of the car, walking into the apartment complex where we were staying, and Rick Adair, the Indians pitching coach, was walking out, and a really nice guy. And I said hi to him as he walked by, and he didn't even respond. He was just kind of like looking off into the distance. And I thought to myself, well, that was strange. I wonder what that was about. And then I got up to my room and had like 15 messages to call people, and the word was starting to come out on what had happened. And then the next two or three days was just really surreal, because one of the things, Steve Olin was one of the most popular guys on the team and among the media too. He's a terrific guy to interview, and he was always, you know, like most closers, was willing to talk after he blew a save. But he was a really down-to-earth, just kind of a regular kind of guy, and we always enjoyed talking to him. And it was just his career was just in his second or third year, and he was just starting to emerge as a quality closer. And it just really just was a shocking thing to have happen. And I think it really affected the Indians that entire season. That was kind of the finishing school for Mike Hargrove, I think, as a manager, because he got through that as well as he could, as well as anyone could. And I think the team came together after that and was a little bit closer. They were still a year away from adding the talent that turned into the powerhouse of the mid-90s, but that was a signature moment, I think, in not just Mike Hargrove's career, but the timeline of the franchise as a whole.
Yeah, no question. No question about that. It's hard to believe, too, that went down over a quarter of a century ago.
Yeah.
Jim, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Thoroughly enjoying the book. We hope that our listeners out there have had a chance to pick that up. Mike Hargrove, A Baseball Life, just really, really cool stuff. Jim, thank you again. We look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim. Again, that's Jim Ingram with the Chronicle-Telegram, the Medina Gazette, and a special contributor to Forbes.com.